With over 20,000 businesses globally trusting GACON, it's no wonder this award-winning app is the preferred choice for accountants, bookkeepers, and CFOs. GACON is your all-in-one solution for comprehensive financial data automation within Google Sheets. Thanks, GACON, for sponsoring this Oh My Fraud episode.
A lot of people have said that the Horizon IT scandal is one of the worst miscarriages of justice in British history. And remember, the British did colonization, slavery, and the fucking Crusades.
If you'd like to earn CPE credit for listening to this episode, visit earmarkcpe.com, download the app, take a short quiz, and get your CPE certificate. Continuing education has never been so easy. And now, on to the episode.
Hello, and welcome to Oh My Fraud, a true crime podcast where our victims aren't killed, but sometimes they literally die waiting for the legal system to mete out justice. I'm Greg Kite.
And I'm Postmaster Caleb Newquist.
So, Postmaster, before we get into it, you cool if I read a listener review real quick?
Please.
Awesome. This one comes from Samantha B., CPA. Samantha says, Oh My Fraud is one of my top go-to podcasts, and I've been raving about it to all my colleagues at my firm. Greg and Caleb often have me chuckling to myself as I listen to their entertaining stories on the biggest scandals and fraud cases I never knew existed.
Ah, that's an amazing review. Why am I talking in an Australian accent? I don't know.
What an amazing review.
Amazing review. We need to hire her and to write ad copy for us, I think.
I think so, too.
Don't you think? Why not?
Yeah, brilliant.
Brilliant. If you like Oh My Fraud, please take a minute to write us a review. Even if you're not great at writing ad copy, who knows? We still may read it on the show.
Also, if your firm's looking for in-house ethics or fraud training that does not suck, we do that. We also do keynote addresses at events and conferences. And don't worry, we can work clean, but we can also work extra filthy, too. It's kind of, if you hire us, it's up to you.
Yeah, there's a spectrum.
Yeah.
So if you want more info on pricing and availability, send us an email at ohmyfraud@earmarkcpe.com.
Perfect. So, Caleb, let's change subjects.
Okay.
I want to know, have you personally ever been falsely accused of something? Could be falsely accused by the authorities, could be falsely accused by your sister, or anywhere in between. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah. I don't know if this really counts or not, but I have a story.
Okay.
One summer I was in college and I went to this small house party. And some guy was like going around and asking people what year they graduated high school. And he was.
So wait, whooping. So is this from a 1980s teen movie?
I mean, it kind of feels like,
yeah.
It, except it's not that old.
Okay.
Not quite that old.
Okay.
I mean, if it had been you, if you'd been telling this story,
it would have been
a 1980s teen movie.
Likely.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but this one was. It was 90s and it was me. And so it was more, you know, ironic and lots more flannel.
Okay. Good.
Right.
Good.
Yeah.
Appropriate.
Anyway. Yeah, totally. Anyway. So this guy's going around and he's asking people what year they graduated high school. And he was whooping and high fiving people who were class of 98 because he was class of 98.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And so he gets to me and asks, hey man, you class of 98? And I said, yeah, I'm class of 98, and he whoops and high-fives me so hard that I thought he dislocated my shoulder.
Wait, for real or hyperbole?
I mean hyperbole.
Okay, okay.
But he did high-five me pretty hard. Anyway, so I go outside with a couple of friends, and, you know, class pride isn't exactly my forte, so I'm...
What?
I know. Anyway, so I'm talking a little shit about this class of 98 zealot that we had just encountered because it was weird, right?
Yeah, that sounds kind of weird.
It was kind of weird. And so, you know, a few minutes after that, the class of 98 fanatic is like coming straight at me with a head full of steam, and he just shoves me right in the chest as hard as I've ever been shoved in the chest up until that point, and maybe ever since. And... he goes, And like, this is a tall guy, like taller than me. I'm 6'2", and this guy was taller than me and had like, you know, a fucking goatee and a brush cut and like, you know, Wrangler jeans on. Like he was, you know, he wrestles live animals for fun.
Gotcha.
You know?
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Intimidating.
Not a good situation for me.
Intimidating.
As a bookish.
Right.
Like nonviolent type.
Right. And here comes this Cobra Kai member straight at you.
Cobra Kai with, you know, like I said, you know, with a very large belt buckle.
Okay. It still plays.
Right. Different kind of belt. Anyway. He shoves me straight in the chest. He says, "You talking shit about the class of 98? And he's just shouting that at me. And I'm like, "What?" Because it's the strangest question I've ever heard in my life.
Shit about an entire group of people that spans the entire world. Are you?
Right. Yeah. And he repeats himself, "You talking shit about the class of 98? And I'm like, "Why are you accusing me of talking shit about the class of 98? I just high-fived you in that fucking kitchen about being in the class of 98. Why would I be talking shit about class of 98? I'm class of 98. And if you haven't picked up on it, this guy wasn't exactly a scholar. So he was apparently satisfied by this explanation. And he stormed off to crush more beer cans on his head or something. I don't know. But that was the end of it.
Nice.
And I got out virtually, unscathed.
Yeah. So really, you were accused of talking shit about you were falsely accused of talking shit about the class of 98 when what you really had done was you had really just talked shit about a guy who was excited about the class of 98. So you were technically falsely accused.
Yeah. Technically. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll back you up in a court of law.
Okay. All right. Cool. I mean, that's what I got. That's what I got for the show, Greg.
Okay. It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, cool. That is super relevant because today's episode is all about hundreds of people who were falsely accused of stealing thousands of pounds from the British Post Office.
Fun fact, the United States Post Office actually predates the United States. In 1775, the Second Continental Congress officially created the Post Office of the United States. And Article 1, Section 8, Clause 7 of the Constitution of the United States of America gives Congress the power to establish a post office and post roads. Our system is a federal system. It is not, nor has it ever been privatized.
It's been attempted. They've tried.
They've tried. They've talked about it. And I always feel like that's a very strange... The idea to privatize the post office is very strange to me. That just doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And just because I think it's just because we're not used to that.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I was about to say. It's because like, it's obvious. We're going to talk about it in a little bit.
Feels
like,
very foreign. Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah.
Foreign. Literally for the US feels especially. Foreign.
Right. Foreign. Right. The post office in the United Kingdom, however, has a very different origin story. And so— Here it is. The roots of the current postal system go back to 1516 when Henry VIII established the Master of Posts, because how else was he going to get his dick pics to Anne Boleyn?
There's no other way.
No other way.
You got to have a Master of the Posts.
Right.
He can't text him. It's 1516 for Christ's sake.
Right. At that point, mail services were only for rich people. But that all changed in 1635 when, according to many sources, King Charles I made it available to all. There's only been 3 Charleses in 400 years. That's
not enough Charleses, really, when you think about it.
Seems like a small number. Anyway, it didn't say how he made it available to all, but I assume that means he just made it cheaper. But also, back then, postage was paid by the recipient, so maybe... 17th century Brits were cool playing, you know, exorbitant postage. If not paying meant they wouldn't get that love letter from Mr. Darcy.
The recipients were paying for postage. They drive on the left side of the roads. Those limey bastards, they're just doing everything wrong is what it feels like to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Limey Bastards is going to age real well.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, the modern postal service in the UK was established in 1660 by King Charles II. Wow. So two Charleses in quick succession, and then no Charles for 400 years, almost for 350 years, basically.
Interesting. Yeah, a lot of, yeah. Because wait, because right now he's Charles III?
Charles III.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about this monarchy business. Anyway, originally, the Postal Service served only England and Wales, but eventually it grew to cover all of Great Britain. The postage stamp wasn't invented until 1837, and in 1840, the General Post Office issued the penny black, which was the first postage stamp used anywhere in the world. Why was there 3 years between when the postage stamp was invented and when it was first used? I don't know. Let's say COVID.
Probably COVID.
COVID-19.
Yeah. COVID-1840.
1837 through 1840.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
The introduction of the postage stamp did three things. First, it established a flat rate for mail that weighed up to half an ounce. Before the stamp, postage was charged based on distance. Weird.
No, makes perfect sense to me.
Does it?
You want to mail this around the corner, or you want to mail it to 2,000 miles away? That's what I think. Our current, I think the flat rate is crazy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see your point.
Yeah.
I see your point. Okay. Second, stamps created a prepay mail system instead of a postage being paid by the recipient. That seems like a smart thing.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, yeah. It seems like a convenience thing to me.
Sure.
So, but at the same time,
what if the letter shows up and, you know, the recipient is broke?
Right. But also, think about this. If the postman came and said, Hey, Mr. Newquist, you got some mail today. Do you got enough money to pay for it? Or do you just want to not know what came? That would be hard to not go. Let me go search in my couch to find some coins to give, because I'd be so curious. I wouldn't want to, you know, FOMO would make me pay that charge, even if
like
it wasn't
exorbitant. I'm not getting text messages in 1660.
Right. The only way you're just not going to care. I'd be so curious. I'd pay quite a bit for that mail.
Right.
So.
Right. Third, the advent of the postage stamp was the birth of the strange and nerdy hobby of stamp collecting.
Correct. And fun fact that the penny black, the very first stamp, if like a mint condition, actually, what's your guess? Did you see my note? What's your guess as to what a mint condition penny black would what you'd be able to get if you had one?
So a stamp, 180 years old, 180, 190 year old stamp.
Yeah.
Mint condition.
Yeah. Mint condition. Top of the line. Top shelf.
2.3 million pounds.
Nope. Only $3,000. Oh, doesn't that seem ridiculously low? The most valuable stamp is called the British Guiana. The British Guiana. That's it. The British Guiana 1 cent magenta, which is valued at $9.4 million. So if you got that first stamp, you're a sucker and a loser. But if you got that British Guiana 1 cent magenta, you got a winner. You nerd. You damn.
Why is that one so valuable? Did you figure out why that one was so valuable?
Yeah, because I mean, look at the name. It's magenta. It's got Guiana in. It's very exotic.
Yeah, magenta. I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. A bunch of weird rebranding, restructuring, and reorganization happened between 1969 and 2011. The details are complex and boring, and we lost interest and decided to skip over all that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. But then huge changes came with the Postal Services Act of 2011. The act allowed up to 90% of Royal Mail, because that's what the what was that? Kind of the branding of the
like
service?
The official trade name of the British Post Office.
Right. So the Postal Services Act of 2011 allowed 90% of Royal Mail to be privatized, and it became a publicly traded company in 2013.
So weird.
Yeah, very weird. And the British government sold the last of its shares in 2015.
one very significant way that the UK Postal Service is different from the US Postal Service has to do with sub-postmasters. Sub-postmasters have been around in the United Kingdom since the 1800s. An article we found in Computer Weekly does a good job summing up what sub-postmastering is all about. It says, sub-postmasters have a contract with the post office to run branches, but they are not employees of the post office. They usually have a retail business that is connected to the post office. The idea being that the retail operation will gain more customers through the post office drawing people in. For instance, let's say you had a drugstore in Sussex. You could also become a sub postmaster and open an official branch of the UK post office right inside your pharmacy, so that then when people come inside to send letters or to buy postage, since they're already in your pharmacy, they'll also refill their Lipitor and grab a cheap last minute Valentine's gift to help their failing marriage limp along for a few more months, just the way CVS does in the United States. Just without the post office stuff, but still with the cheap Valentine's. You know what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
You can send it straight from the CVS.
If you had a post office, you could send it straight from the CVS to your estranged spouse.
Yes.
With whom you're trying to help a failing marriage limp along for a few months. Brilliant. Right. You're always one step ahead. As of 2023, about 99% of all UK post offices are franchises that are run by sub-postmasters who are, as we said, independent business people. The other 1% are called Crown Post Offices, which I assume by the name means they're all run by King Charles III. So The answer to what does the British monarchy even do is they sell stamps, I'm assuming. I haven't looked into it super closely, but I believe that that's accurate.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Running a post office franchise as a sub-postmaster is a very unique situation. As a franchise operator, you're not charged any fees or commissions by Post Office Limited, which is basically the name for Post Office Corporate, or as John Oliver would say, Post Office Limited is the franchisee's business daddy. Once you obtain a post office franchise, you do need to buy and install equipment for the franchise. However, under certain circumstances, the corporate post office might make a financial contribution towards the equipment. Then you make money primarily by getting a cut of all postage sold at your franchise, anywhere between 9% to 18%.
Introducing GAcon, the award-winning Google Sheets integration for QuickBooks and Xero that eliminates app fatigue and streamlines your financial data management. With GAcon, you can say goodbye to juggling multiple accounting apps and the inefficiencies and errors that come with them. GAcon is your all-in-one solution for comprehensive financial data automation within Google Sheets. Its powerful two-way sync allows you to effortlessly export data from your accounting software, make changes in Google Sheets, and bulk post those updates back to QuickBooks or Xero. No more manual exports and imports. GAcon's robust workflow builder takes automation to the next level, enabling you to automate various tasks, from emailing reports to clients and creating alerts for data changes to scheduling backups on Google Drive. Plus, you can consolidate multiple entities and build custom reports and KPI dashboards tailored to your specific needs. But don't just take our word for it. Michael King, owner of a fractional CFO firm, raves about GAcon. GAcon is the most valuable, the most effective, the highest ROI we have on any of our tech platforms. It saves us 40 hours a month. With over 20,000 businesses globally trusting GAcon, it's no wonder this award-winning app is the preferred choice for accountants, bookkeepers, and CFOs. To learn more about using GAcon, head over to omyfraud.promo/GAcon. That is omyfraud.promo/GACCON.
In 1999, the Post Office introduced the Horizon Accounting and Inventory Software Program.
The Horizon system was intended to transform the existing paper-based branch accounting into an electronic system covering the full range of post office services. But almost immediately, sub-postmasters started complaining that the Horizon system was shit. Specifically, it was falsely reporting accounting shortfalls, sometimes to the tune of thousands of pounds. Not good.
Yikes.
Yeah. So the sub-postmasters brought it up with the post office, and the post office told them to shut up because the system was right. But it wasn't.
No.
The problem wasn't just that the Horizon system glitches were showing cash and inventory shortfalls for many of its sub-postmasters. The other problem was the contract between the post office and the sub-postmasters. It reads, "The operator shall be fully liable for any loss of or damage to any post office cash and stock, any deficiencies in stocks of products, and or any resulting shortfall in the money payable to the post office limited must be made good by the operator without delay, so that in the case of any shortfall, post office limited is paid the full amount." So the accounting system imposed by the post office was showing false deficiencies and shortfalls, and the sub-postmaster contract required them to pay for any deficiencies and shortfalls out of their own pocket. That seems bad.
Yeah. It seems rough, but also I kind of get it, because if they're going, hey, the money that you deposited with us doesn't match what you were supposed to sell, right, then it's like, so you fucked up, so send us the money. I've been part of writing enough contracts that I know that the person in power writes the contract to favor them very strongly. And
yeah,
and a lot of, and these postmasters are probably like, yeah, cool. If that ever, it's not going to happen. I'm a good business person. So whatever. Yeah. If there's a discrepancy, sure. I gotcha. Yep.
And the post office refused to entertain any suggestions that the problem was with the software.
There were some 11,000 sub-postmasters in the UK. Approximately 3,500 of them were affected by the problems in the Horizon accounting system, and 900 of them were criminally prosecuted for theft and fraud. Here are a handful of the stories of those affected. In 2002, Seema Misra and her husband Devinder decided they wanted a second child, but it wasn't until 2010 that they were able to conceive, and Seema became pregnant. In the meantime, specifically in 2005, Seema acquired a post office and became a sub-postmistress, but from day one, she was aware that something was wrong with the accounting system. The person who trained her on the Horizon system told her that the accounts were always off and that she should just make up for any shortfalls with money from the non-post office part of the business. That ended up not being as easy as her trainer made it sound. And at one point, Seema even had to sell some of her jewelry to make up for Horizon's discrepancies. Eventually, Seema was accused of stealing £74,000. Her court date was set in 2010. She was pregnant with her second child, and coincidentally, she was ordered to appear in court on her first child's 10th birthday. She knew that jail time was a possibility, but she was confident it wouldn't come to that because she knew that she hadn't done anything wrong. That's why she literally fainted when the judge handed down a 15-month jail sentence. She was imprisoned in the largest female prison in the UK. Actually, it's the largest female prison in all of Europe, where she was convinced her life was in danger, as was the life of her unborn baby. She was at rock bottom and says that the only thing keeping her from committing suicide was the fact that she was pregnant with her second child. She ended up being released after serving 4 months, and in 2011, she gave birth to her second child while she was still wearing her electronic probation tag. She had been a pillar of the community, but had been disgraced. People in her community labeled her as a thief who stole money from old people, and after her picture appeared on the front page of their local newspaper, her husband got beaten up by a bunch of strangers.
Martin and Gina Griffiths became sub-postmaster and sub-postmistress of the Farm Road Post Office in Great Sutton in 1995. 14 years later, in 2009, they started seeing unexplained shortfalls. By 2013, the shortfalls had accumulated to 57,000 pounds. That same year, armed robbers busted into their store, smashed Martin's hat with a crowbar, and stole 54,000 pounds out of their safe. Martin and Gina paid more than 100,000 pounds total to the post office in an effort to balance the books, wiping out their life savings. Regardless, the post office revoked their status as a sub-postmaster and postmistress, citing their failure to manage their accounts and the branch's security properly. And so Martin Griffiths, at age 58, threw himself in front of a bus. He left a note for his family, apologizing and telling them that he loved them.
Peter Huxham was a popular sub-postmaster from Starcross, a village on the banks of the River X. He was charged and convicted of stealing 16,000 pounds based on data from the Horizon IT system and was sentenced to 8 months in jail. But Peter's story is a little different in that he didn't question the veracity of the Horizon IT system. He assumed that it was correct and that the 16,000 pounds was in fact missing. And since only Peter and his wife Jackie had access to the cash at their branch, Peter, using his powers of deductive reasoning, accused his wife of stealing all that money. His accusations eventually led to the collapse of their 22-year marriage. As a result of his incarceration and the loss of his marriage, Peter developed an alcohol problem and mental health issues, and he isolated himself from the friends and family that, you know, he wasn't already estranged from. That's why his body wasn't found until weeks after his death. Weeks after his death. By that time, his corpse was so decomposed that his cause of death was impossible to accurately identify. But regardless, his death has been treated as a suspected suicide.
But then there was Alan Bates. In 1998, he bought a post office in North Wales, but his contract with the post office was terminated in 2003 because of a 1,000-pound shortfall. As a result, he lost his job, his life savings, and his retirement plan. But Bates refused to accept that the accounting errors were his fault. So he set up a website to find other sub-postmasters who were getting screwed, and his story was picked up by Computer Weekly. Bates and his fellow fucked-over sub-postmasters formed an organization called the Justice for Sub-Postmasters Alliance.
It was supposed to be called Justice for Fucked-Over Postmasters, but they, even in Britain, that was too far.
Yeah. Yeah, they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I understand. Okay. Anyway. Eventually, Bates initiated a civil group litigation against the post office. The litigation represented 555 sub-postmasters and was settled in 2019 for £58 million total.
I so wish it was 666 postmasters, but that it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, the litigants owed £47 million in legal fees, so the difference of £11 million split 555 ways was just about 20,000 pounds per person. Not nothing, but clearly not enough to adequately compensate for years of lost wages, lost life savings, and lost retirement plans, not to mention jail time, lost reputations, like that 20,000 pounds is not going to make up for all that.
No, not by a damn sight.
For hundreds of sub-postmasters.
Yeah.
Arguably, the biggest win was that Alan Bates and his cohort brought this entire problem to light. Politicians started getting involved and more sub-postmasters gained the courage to talk about their stories. It eventually came out that although the post office received thousands of complaints about the Horizon system, their staff was instructed to tell everyone who contacted them that they were the only ones experiencing any problems.
So it was like, hey,
come on.
Hey, my system is telling me that I owe 57,000 pounds. I go, what the fuck are you talking about? And it's like, yeah, the system's
first we've heard of it.
Like, If the system was broken, don't you think we would have heard from other sub-postmasters? This is your problem. Shut up and pay us our money.
Wanker. It was also revealed that by 2017, the post office knew that the losses it was charging sub-postmasters with could be explained by errors in the Horizon IT system, or alternately by remote tampering But the post office continued to doggedly pursue sub-postmasters, insisting that there's no other explanation for the shortfalls besides theft and fraud.
By combining client communications, file review, reporting, and task management, Keeper has everything you need to run your bookkeeping or CAS practice. Keeper is an all-in-one app that allows you, your team, and your clients to easily collaborate to make your monthly close as efficient as possible, starting with a beautiful custom-branded client portal optimized for bookkeeping work. Your client can answer questions you have about uncategorized transactions, allowing you to categorize and automatically post them to QuickBooks Online correctly, all without ever leaving Keeper. Keeper's month-end file review feature will surface transactions that may not be posted correctly, and with Keeper's customized reports, you'll be able to increase the value that your firm provides clients by giving them reports they'll actually read. Keeper's built-in task management ensures nothing falls through the cracks, and it includes time tracking so you can see where you and your team spends their time. Keeper has a very affordable and clear pricing model that starts at only $8 a month. To learn more about why thousands of bookkeepers and accountants trust Keeper to manage their month-end close and to get 20% off your first 3 months, head over to omyfraud.promo/keeper. That is omyfraud.promo/KEEPER.
A public inquiry was launched in 2021 where evidence was heard from the post office and from Fujitsu, the company that engineered the Horizon system. Since then, overwhelming evidence has been produced showing the fault was with the Horizon system and not with the sub-postmasters. Starting from the first prosecution until now, over 60 affected sub-postmasters have died waiting for justice, including four suicides.
Hey.
As of this recording, only 95% of criminal convictions related to the Horizon IT scandal have been overturned. That means that there's about 45 people still in jail because of glitches in the accounting system implemented by the post office. The British government has set up three different compensation tracks for those who have been affected by the Horizon IT scandal. They don't call them tracks. They call them schemes because they're British. And in Britain, words don't mean what words are supposed to mean. So they call them schemes. The first scheme was for those 555 sub-postmasters that we spoke about earlier. They're being offered settlements of £75,000, but many are expected to push for more. The second scheme is that any sub-postmaster whose conviction has been overturned is being offered a £600,000 settlement. And the third scheme is any sub-postmasters who were not convicted or part of the 555 Bates group can receive a fixed payment of £75,000. Just this year, in 2024, a TV miniseries called Mr. Bates versus the Post Office was released where actor Toby Jones plays Alan Bates. In real life, the 69-year-old Alan Bates is reasonably handsome. Unfortunately, Toby Jones is not. Have you seen the first Captain America movie? In that, the bad guy, Red Skull, was played by Hugo Weaving. Hugo Weaving also played Agent Smith in the Matrix movies. Toby Jones, however, played Red Skull's weird-looking little sidekick. That's who they cast to play the hero of this story. In episode 49 of this podcast, we talked about Frank Tassone, who stole millions of dollars from the Roslyn School District in New York. They made a movie about that and cast Hugh Jackman as Frank Tassone. In this one, they cast Toby Jones as Alan Bates. Oof, that's like casting David Cross as me. I mean, I'd still love that. He's bald with a beard and glasses, so it makes sense. But overall, he's not an attractive gentleman, and that would hurt my feelings. So cast him as me in a movie where I'm the bad guy, like Where I Defraud Caleb Newquist and Oh My Fraud, the podcast, out of millions of dollars. And also, you got to cast Alexander Gudinov as Caleb Newquist. You got to, because he's a dead ringer for you.
Okay, Greg. Did we learn anything?
I did learn. Oh. I learned at least a couple of things.
Okay.
So when we were going through the different anecdotal stories of the different sub postmasters and sub postmistresses who were affected by this, one of them, possibly the most heartbreaking of them, was Peter Huxman from Starcross. He was the one who accused his wife of stealing the 16,000 pounds. Yep. In our research, he wasn't alone. He wasn't the only one who believed that the Horizon system was right and that the money was actually missing. I found another story about a sub post mistress named Joe Hamilton, who also genuinely believed the discrepancies that she was accused of had been caused by her own mistakes. So she on her own volition pleaded guilty to the charges that were brought against her, because she was offered, if she pleaded guilty, she would just be on probation and wouldn't have to actually serve the jail time. But she legit believed that, yeah, she must have made some big error and that she legit owed all that money. So the thing that I guess was reinforced by that for me, Caleb, was that numbers plus confidence is extremely convincing. So with the post office, they were like, no, the system is there. The system shows these hard numbers that were shortfalls. You have to pay it to us because the system is right. Don't fuck with our system. You're a bad person. Pay us the fucking money. It's extremely convincing. And we usually see that in the other way, where it's the con man, because again, con man stands for confidence man. Yep. So you're saying, hey, these are the right numbers. Believe me and don't be a dumb shit and do what I'm saying, or, you know, act accordingly. But like I said, whether you're committing the fraud or being accused of fraud, numbers plus confidence can be very manipulative.
Yeah.
So there was another thing.
Oh, okay.
There was another thing that came to mind with this story. Like we said earlier, there were about 11,000 sub-postmasters. 900 of them were prosecuted as part of the scandal, which is about 8% of the sub-postmasters who were prosecuted for crimes. But also in another account that I read, 3,500 people were affected by the scandal. That's about 30% of the sub postmasters, and really that's one of the things. And Alan Bates pointed this out. That's one of the main things that made it obvious to anyone like Alan Bates who was paying attention that the problem was with the accounting system. And because how does overnight somewhere between 8% and 30% of all sub-postmasters turn evil and start stealing money from the post office. Those numbers don't make sense.
Doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
At all. So that was kind of an indicator that, like I said, that the people were innocent and that there was a problem with the system. But, and this might be horrible to say out loud, but think about it, likely there were some sub-postmasters, at least a few, who were actually crooked and were actually stealing money from the post office while this whole scandal was going down. So if that was the case, they likely got fined and sentenced and sent to jail, which is great because for those people, that was justice. But now those same people who were actually stealing money from the post office and did actually receive justice for crimes they actually committed are now receiving 600,000 pound settlements just because they happened to steal at the exact time that a massive IT problem was also happening. That's like getting pulled over. This has happened to me a number of times where I've gotten pulled over for speeding. I knew 100% that I was speeding. But then the police officer comes back and like throws my license at me and is like, hey, you got lucky because I'm getting pulled away on another call. But in this case, he would throw my license at me and also hand me a check for $600,000 as he went off to his other call.
Right.
So basically, the other thing I learned is bad guys, theoretically, bad guys could get very lucky when the circumstances are in their favor. When karma is asleep. Bad guys can get very, very lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, the glitches in the glitches, there's a glitch in a glitch.
Yeah.
But then, and then, yeah, the bad guys win.
Yeah. Yep. Horrible. Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible.
Are you looking for a way to streamline your client's multi-state compliance, tax registration, business licensing, beneficial ownership information reporting, and unlock new revenue opportunities for your firm? Look no further than Harbor Compliance. With Harbor Compliance's powerful software suite and expert services, you can easily manage your clients' entity registrations, business licenses, and tax registrations across all 50 states. Their purpose-built solution transforms the way you navigate the complex landscape of regulatory requirements, saving you time and reducing risk. By joining the Harbor Compliance Alliance, you can expand your service offerings without increasing overhead. Their team handles the regulatory filings, freeing up your staff to focus on higher value engagements. Plus, with their Entity Manager software, you'll have real-time access to your client's entity data, enabling you to provide more informed guidance and support. As remote work and online sales continue to grow, the demand for multi-state compliance solutions is booming. Position your firm to capitalize on this trend and improve client retention by partnering with Harbor Compliance. To learn more about the benefits of joining the Harbor Compliance Alliance, head over to omyfraud.promo/harbor. That is omyfraud.promo/HARBOR.
Yeah. Anyway, well,
any other thoughts you have about?
What have I been thinking about?
This case is weird for our podcast.
It is weird for our podcast.
Because it's about fraud, but it's about fraud. It kind of turns it on its head.
Yeah.
Because it's a bunch of people that got convicted falsely of fraud.
Right. It's about a fraud that wasn't there.
Right.
Yeah. The fraud that wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a title. Anyway. Yeah. I don't know. I think. Oh, here's something I was thinking about. Let me ask you this. In the research, did you ever get the feeling that these postmasters, the sub-postmasters, were kind of deferential, with the exception of clearly Mr. Bates and some others, but like, did you get the sense they were deferential to the post office? And so like, you know, you had the examples of the people who were like, yeah, if they say I screwed it up, I must have screwed it up. That to me is, there's a certain, I think in like maybe British culture, like there's certain deference for authority.
Okay.
And like, you know, kind of like the bureaucracy and like civil service or, you know, public service, those kinds of things. The vibe of that whole thing in the culture of Great Britain is very different than it is in America. Whereas in America, like, trust in like institutions is like, and maybe it's just more current, but it's just like, it feels like trust in institutions, like there's more skepticism, I think.
Yeah, you know?
And so like, if it was a similar thing, I don't know, you could probably find a similar American scandal to this, but I don't know. Mm. Like, I guess the deference given to the post office in this case is something that kind of surprised me, but I think it in some way it kind of rang true that in British culture, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, they're smart people running, you know, these right. things. And so
right.
they're probably right.
And I wonder, maybe that's echoes of like the, you know, my very incomplete understanding of British history, you know, that government was a iron-fisted monarchy at times.
Yeah, sure.
Where it's like, if the government says it's this way, then you need to shut up and agree with that, or else things are going to go poorly for you. So right. I see what you're talking about the deference that the sub postmasters showed to the post office, but it wasn't that they didn't, because so many of them, like I said, there was literally thousands of sub postmasters who called the post office and was like, there's problems with the system.
Oh, okay.
And they,
yep, that's
and
true.
They shed, but that's the thing. So there was an initial questioning going, hey, this is showing shortfalls. I'm not mishandling my money like this. Something's wrong. And the post office was like, shut up. The system's good. You're wrong. Pay us the money. Here's what the contract says. Do it. And then that's when they were like, okay, I guess I got to do that. So like I said, that's more, you know, we were the ones who were like, you know, throwing tea into the Boston Harbor to stick it to which king was that?
That was King George III.
That's King George III is who that was. So we were sticking it to the king, whereas in a lot of British history, it seems like the king was sticking it to the people. And that, like I said, maybe that explains part of the cultural differences between that you're talking about between the US and Brits.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah,
could be.
Maybe.
Exciting.
I mean it's obviously tragic when like people are falsely accused and it ruins Ooh. People's lives. You
yeah.
know, it's just like it's just gut wrenching, you know,
yeah.
worry about that stuff.
Yeah. Well,
and
as an epilogue, I mean there now that and it's so funny how this
but there's cases still unresolved, right?
There's cases still unresolved, but this mini series, this pop culture event is yeah. the thing that's bringing this to everyone's attention, and there is outrage in the United Kingdom against the government that right. they have not that it happened for so long that the post office was so entrenched in its stance that they were, you know, above reproach with their yep. system. And now that it's clear that things are messed up, why doesn't everybody have all the compensation yesterday right. for
why
the tragedies that have happened?
Made whole and then some.
Because you yeah. can't talk about, I mean, it doesn't take long about talking about people stepping in front of buses and getting their marriages, their 22-year marriages ruined by right. this before you just go, yeah, this is a tragic miscarriage of justice.
Or pregnant women in prison. Like, yeah.
All of
yeah.
it. Yeah. Hard. All right. That's it for this episode. Remember, if you're into BDSM and you were having an affair with a woman who was a sub, but you're not having that affair anymore, the person you were having the affair with is technically a sub post mistress.
Very nice. Very nice. And also remember, if you ever make a movie based on a real life fraud, justice has been perverted if the bad guy is played by Hugh Jackman or if the good guy is played by Toby Jones.
If you want to drop us a line, send us an email at ohmyfraud@earmarkcpe.com. Caleb, if people just want to get a hold of you and cut me out, how can they do that?
LinkedIn / Caleb Newquist. If people want to cut me out, which they often do, how would they get a hold of you?
Same thing. Go to LinkedIn. I'm Greg Kite, CPE on LinkedIn. Look for a
CPE? CPE?
CPE. No, CPA. I do a lot of CPE, but I'm CPA. Look for the guy who's vaguely similar to David Cross.
David
and
Cross.
That'd be me.
Right. Okay. Oh My Fraud is written by Greg Kite and myself. Our producer is Zach Frank. If you like watching these podcasts, you can watch them on YouTube or listen to them on YouTube, whatever you want to do. But just know, if that's how you like to consume podcasts, go to YouTube, find Oh My Fraud, listen there. Some people like it though.
If you like listening to this podcast, who knows? You might also like watching this podcast, and you're in luck because this podcast is on YouTube. Go on there. Search Oh My Fraud. You'll find it. You'll like it. You'll be hooked. It's like the Joe Rogan Experience, just not dumb.
Rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, including on YouTube. If you listen on Earmark, though, you can get CPE. You can't get CPE on YouTube. So...
Well, you could watch it on YouTube and then take the quiz on the Earmark app, and you nailed it.
Oh, see? Look at easy. That. Greg Kite. So, Greg Kite, everybody.
I'm a power user of the Earmark CPE app. I'm 6 months early, and I've already got all my CPE done for my 2-year reporting period.
Wow.
Thanks, Earmark CPE.
Be like Greg Kite, CPA, CPAs. CPAs?
CP, Greg Kite CPE.
CPEs. Join us next time for more avarice, swindlers, and scams from stories that will make you say, oh my
fraud. Oh my fraud. Oh my fraud.
Oh my fraud.